Welcome to today's reading of the Midland Reporter Telegram and the Odessa American, read by volunteers and staff. You can hear this program on Recording Library of West Texas Radio and on demand at recordinglibrary.org.
Hi, this is Jack. I'm reading the Midland Reporter Telegram for Wednesday, July 27th, 2022. Section A. MISD Board rewards Ramsey's work. By Stuart Durain. Midland ISD board members hired Angelica Ramsey in early 2021 to set up the district, its teachers, and students for the type of success not experienced in more than a decade. MISD has ranked in the bottom quartile of larger school districts, dropping to 199th out of 200 at one point. As recently as 2019, 9 MISD campuses receiving failing grades, according to the TEA. Ramsey was hired from the Pleasant Valley School District in Camarillo, California, to fix that and succeed where other permanent leaders previously struggled. The expectation is growth has taken place. In Midland, MISD officials' words, the hard work of the district's teachers and students carrying out the plan from the district service center has resulted in internal metrics that showed the district demonstrating an improvement not experienced in around 5 years. The amazing results that have led to meeting all 5 LSG goals is due to the hard work of our students, teachers, staff, and leaders, Ramsey stated. I'm thankful to work alongside amazing MISD educators. Also demonstrated is a first round of star scores that has district officials more excited about what's to come than at any time in recent memory. That preliminary information showed academic performance growth, including the number of times that students in grades 3 to 8 surpassed 70% passage. We are optimistic for the August 15th school ratings that will come out, Ramsey said. While we cannot yet accurately predict letter grades, the growth we are seeing across the school district shows the progress being made citywide. Based on this, I feel comfortable that we have exited several D and F-rated schools and will have more in AB schools than MISD has ever had under the current accountability system. It is because of gains seen when it comes to academic achievement, specifically Lone Star Governance Program goals, that the district met under Ramsey's leadership that resulted in a positive review. Brian Murray, MISD president, said Monday night that the board is extremely excited to where we are headed. An increase to Ramsey's salary also was part of the review process. Her salary moved from $275,000 to $310,000. Ramsey was hired in early 2021 with a $275 base salary, which was the same as her predecessor, Orlando Riddick. Ryder Warren had resigned from his position in 2016, making $265,000. The pay increase appears to move Ramsey up the rankings for superintendents across the state. According to a list on the TEA, Ramsey was around the 92nd highest paid superintendent in the state during the 21-22 school year. A salary of $310,000 would have put her tied for around 50th on the list and ahead of what Scott Murray was making at Ector County ISD, and what Warren made last year at Northwest ISD. The pay increase also means Midland ISD's salary for a superintendent has jumped from $225,000 during the 2012 school year to $310,000 in just more than a decade. We have confidence that we have the great leader we have been looking for, Murray said, sharing the meeting. Diving program adds to storied history. USA Diving Junior Nationals, taking place at COM Aquatics, have brought athletes from elite diving clubs around the country in hopes of winning a national championship. One of those clubs that arrived in Midland is the Moss Farms Diving Tigers, a storied diving program headquartered in Moultrie, Georgia, a town some 200 miles south of Atlanta with about 14,000 residents. Moss Farms holds claim to 26 junior Olympic national championships, 9 seniors, 8 internationals, 11 Canadian AM championships, 38 YMCA, 2 World Age Group Individual Championships, 24 Junior and Senior National Champions, and 39 Georgia High School Championships. The Diving Tigers from Moultrie can add a pair of 11 and under nationals awarded one on day one in Midland to the extensive list. Moss Farms is an incredible place, high diving manager Leslie Hasselbeck Adams said. They're solely focused on diving at their facility, and they have been around for a really long time. They boast a huge legacy of greatness in all levels of diving. Robert C. Moose Moss started the Moss Farms diving program about 20 years after returning to Moultrie from World War II, where he served as a fighter pilot. Over the next 6 decades, Moss Farms divers established their extensive diving tradition. We've been given great facilities similar to what's here in Midland, he said. It's without question that Fox and his staff have had their hand in producing young diving talent. It's what we set out to do. It would mean the world to them, he said, for his athletes. While Fox recognizes the importance of events like junior nationals, he says that keeping pressure at a minimum is a key to his athletes' success. All we can ask of them is to be the best of which they're capable of doing. We want to be properly prepared to perform. This trip to nationals comes with added motivation for Moss Farms, as they keep one of their own in mind after he was involved in a terrible accident out of the pool just before the trip to Midland. Gibson Stuckey sustained injuries that will cut his diving career short. This caused the coaching staff, as well as the athletes on Moss Farms, to come together and appreciate their opportunities more. We want to keep things in proper perspective and understand that it's just diving. We want our kids to know that diving is what they do, not who they are. Success comes at all ages for the Diving Tigers. On the competition's first day, Beck Gregory captured the boys' 11 and under platform title, while Ellie Reese Nide won the girls' 11 and under division in the same event. Moss Farms was the only club to capture 2 national titles on Monday. Travel was extensive, including multiple connecting flights for the substantially large group of 23 athletes. Although Moultrie's divers came from around 1,180 miles away, Midland is an area where they feel comfortable. We can relate to this. Coming from a smaller town, we're super excited to have Midland as a host. The U.S. Nationals continue through the weekend, concluding August 2nd. Loud and proud, that's Niño America. At the Beto O'Rourke event in Midland last week, Niño America again made his presence felt. Niño America is the alter ego of Niño Rodriguez, a born and raised Midlander. Niño has a presence on social media, including thousands of followers on Twitter and 269,000 likes on TikTok. The so-called MAGA mullet embraces all things Trump and will call out those on the wrong side of the political or social aisle. Midlanders got their first look at Niño America when a protest of the George Floyd death took place in 2020 at Midland Park Mall. "Here comes the Christians," was how he made his entrance on that late spring day. He counter-protested the Black Lives Matter rally with a Make America Great Again flag and red hat. Some also may remember when Niño brought his show to a Midland ISD meeting when masks were on the agenda. He spoke out against masks. He also has protested the Reporter Telegram, spoke out against the remaining of the former Lee High School, and preached Christianity at gay pride events. A self-professed born-again Christian wears his faith on his sleeve, just like his loyalty to President Trump. He told the Reporter Telegram last week he believes there isn't a Republican that measures up to Trump in 2024. "If it isn't Trump, it's not right," he said. "Things weren't always Trump and the Bible for Niño," he said. "He is a changed man, no drugs and drinking and no gangs. God put something in me." He said he runs a trucking company and that he and his wife have 3 children. "My community in Southside Midland loves me. My people are grateful for what I did. It is a public event. This is my city. I'm going to take a stand. At the O'Rourke event, Nino and others involved in protesting were escorted out by police. He said afterward, he was illegally detained for 45 minutes after he was falsely accused by a Beto supporter of being physical inside the Martin Luther King Center. It was hard to see any contact initiated by Nino during the packed event from his social media videos. An MPD spokesperson said they didn't have any information on the incident, and Nino ultimately wasn't arrested. Interestingly, in a news video from the event, O'Rourke, the Democratic Party's candidate for governor, is seen asking for Nino to come up and say what he wanted to say. O'Rourke has been in Nino's shoes, interrupting a press event in Uvalde with state and community leaders before being asked to leave. Nino said his intention at O'Rourke's event or elsewhere isn't to go viral, but just to be bold for Jesus. Nino America doesn't hide the fact that he is brash, loud, in your face, and like he probably makes those in the political battles a little uncomfortable. He knows he's not going to be liked even by those who agree with his politics or stance on a particular issue, and that doesn't bother him. As a social media influencer, that is part of the game. As a self-professed Christian, he is more than okay with rattling those he believes lack faith. "Oh, I don't consider myself nothing but an American," he said at the Midland Park Mall rally. "I do not like labels. I'm not a minority. I'm not a Mexican. I'm an American. And it's not very hard for me to protest because I'm a born-again Christian. I have a loud mouth, and the Lord Jesus is my Savior. I don't fear the Rona coronavirus. I don't fear Black Lives Matter. I don't fear Antifa. I only fear God." An aggravated robbery charge. A Midland man was arrested Sunday after allegedly trying to rob a person at gunpoint. Rene Gonzalez Natividad was being held Tuesday at Midland County Jail on an aggravated robbery charge, a first-degree felony. At about 2:27 p.m. Sunday, a Midland Police Department officer was conducting his routine patrol on the 3600 block of West Wall when he saw a man running southbound on the roadway, and he appeared to be running from another man. The officer saw the second man grab the running man and punch him in the face. The officer then activated his lights and sirens and approached both men. The second man, later identified as Natividad, began running from the scene. The victim, who was bleeding from the nose, stated that Natividad had a firearm and was attempting to rob him. The victim told the officer he was leaving Riley's Bar and Grill when Natividad approached him in the parking lot and attempted to get him to walk with him to the alleyway behind the hotel across the street. The victim refused, and Natividad took out a firearm and demanded money and his cell phone. The victim stated he told him he only had money but did not have his cell phone with him. Natividad became angry that the victim lied about having a cell phone and demanded for the victim to give him the phone or he was going to kill him. Fearing for his life, the victim took off running when he saw the officer's patrol unit. While the MPD officer was attending to the victim, he located Natividad on the passenger side of his patrol unit, attempting to open the passenger door. Natividad was placed in handcuffs and stated he had a firearm. His bond was set at $250,000. Another man, Midland man, was arrested Friday on indecency with a child charge. Errol Adenick, 36, was being held Tuesday at Midland County Jail on an indecency with a child sexual contact charge, a second-degree felony. Midland police officers were dispatched Friday in reference to a sexual assault of a child. Officers spoke with the victim, who stated the incident happened at about 5:30 that morning in Adenick's house. The victim stated she was asleep next to Errol before he started to touch her inappropriately. MPD officers then went to Adenick's residence, where he told officers he was on a 2-year probation for a prior sexual assault charge involving an adult woman. Adenick was transported to the Midland Police Department for further questioning. He had originally told officers that the children slept on the floor and that no one slept in the bed with him, but later admitted to having the victim on the bed and touching her back. He also stated he had been drinking a lot and could not recall anything.
Hello, this is Michael reading additional articles from the Midland Reporter-Telegram published Wednesday, July 27th. Rob Elementary Principal Placed on Paid Leave. The Associated Press, Uvalde. The principal of the Texas Elementary School, where a gunman killed 19 students and two teachers, has been placed on administrative leave Monday, her attorney said. Rob Elementary School Principal Mandy Gutierrez was placed on paid administrative leave by Uvalde School Superintendent Hal Harrell, said attorney Ricardo Cedillo of San Antonio in a terse statement to the Associated Press. Cedillo did not provide further information on the reason for the move or any other comment. A message to a spokeswoman for the Uvalde Consolidated Independent School District was not immediately returned. A legislative committee blamed Gutierrez and an assistant for knowing a lock on the classroom where the killings happened on May 24th wasn't working and not having it repaired. Also Monday, the district school board approved a three-week postponement of the start of the district school year until September 6th, so district officials can replace Rob Elementary's classrooms and other educational resources. Energy Metric Shows U.S. Having Hottest Summer on Record, by Brian K. Sullivan, Bloomberg. This year is shaping up to be one of the hottest on record for the U.S., based on a metric that's crucial to energy traders. The measure is known as cooling degree days, and it is used to track how weather affects electricity demand. The higher the number, the more fuel needs to be used to cool homes and businesses. Across the U.S. this week, cooling degree days value hit 610 on a population-weighted basis, the highest in data going back to 1950. Said Matt Rogers, president of the Commodity Weather Group, a commercial forecaster specializing in energy and agriculture outlooks. The record is well above the 10-year average of 596 and the 30-year normal of 530, he said. The next highest years on the list are 2010 and 2011, which both had a value of 603 through July 25th, according to Rogers. Back in 2011, Texas wilted under record heat in a situation that's repeating itself this year. Super hot Texas is really fueling the story, too, similar to 2011, he said. Through most of the summer, which meteorologists measure as June 1st to August 31st, the heat has been centered over central U.S. and the southern Great Plains, which has left Texas cooking and its electric grid struggling to meet demand. Dallas posted 21 days with temperatures of 100 degrees Fahrenheit or more through July and a cooling degree days value of 674, 163 above normal, according to the National Weather Service. Other parts of the U.S. have avoided such baking heat. Chicago has had a monthly average temperature of 75.6 degrees Fahrenheit this July, slightly below normal, according to the Weather Service. New York's Central Park is 2.3 degrees above average, though it was near normal before last weekend's heat wave. The Pacific Northwest has been cool most of the summer, though the heat is starting to seep into the region. Seattle's high is expected to hover in the 90s for the rest of the week, while Portland, Oregon, will hit 101 on Tuesday. This is the Business and Oil page. Big oil set to break record with high prices, by Kevin Crowley, Laura Hurst, and Francois de Bupé, Bloomberg. Big oil is poised for a record-breaking $50 billion profit in the second quarter, but the industry's stellar performance could contain the seeds of its own decline. The soaring earnings are a direct result of the high energy prices that have stoked inflation, piled pressure on consumers, raised the risk of recession, and prompted calls for windfall taxes. Amid this political and economic turbulence, shareholders may have to temper their expectations for rising returns. There's a strong chance that earnings will peak in the second or third quarter with a small decline thereafter, said Ahmed Ben Salem, an analyst at Odo BHF. This looming recession is calming things down. ExxonMobil Corporation, Chevron Corporation, Shell PLC, Total Energies SE, and BP PLC, collectively known as the super majors, are set to make even more money than they did in 2008, when international oil prices jumped as high as $147 a barrel. That's because it's not just crude that has soared during the crisis created by Russia's invasion of Ukraine. Natural gas prices and refining margins have also broken records. Exxon leads the pack with a 46% rise this year, while Total Energies is the worst performer, though still up 11%, while the S&P 500 index has dropped 17%. Many major markets have found themselves critically short of refining capacity due to a combination of shutdowns, investments that were stalled by the pandemic, sanctions on Russia, and a decision by China to limit petroleum exports. The U.S. Gulf Coast's 3-2-1 crack spread, a rough measure of profit margins from refining a barrel of crude, exploded to an average of $48.84 in the second quarter, more than double the level a year earlier. A similar measure for Europe. Total Energy's variable cost margin rose threefold to $145.70. Refining now makes up 26% of the cost of a gallon of gasoline in the U.S., up from an average of 14% in the previous decade, according to the Energy Information Administration. Shell is expecting to post a $1 billion gain in refining results. Exxon, which has the largest downstream footprint of the supermajors, is expected to make more in the second quarter than the previous nine combined, according to estimates collected by Bloomberg. These eye-watering refining margins probably won't last, said Matt Murphy, a Calgary-based analyst at Tudor, Pickering, Holt & Company. High fuel prices, combined with a broader surge in the cost of living, are hurting consumers. Gasoline demand is underperforming forecasts. We're seeing a degree of demand destruction. As a result, companies are seen being conservative despite soaring earnings. Exxon will probably use its excess cash to lower debt, according to Citigroup Incorporated, analysts led by Alastair Syme. Chevron may increase the bottom end of its buyback range to $10 billion for the year, they said. Sky-high profits aren't solely the result of the broad-based upswing in commodity prices. The supermajors are also spending much less than they did the last time oil was above $100 a barrel. Capital expenditures is creeping to a forecast of $80 billion this year, but that's half the level of 2013. Costs have been on a long downward trend since 2014, said Paul Cheng, a New York-based analyst at Scotiabank. With commodity prices this good, it's the perfect combination. That's not necessarily the view of political leaders, such as President Joe Biden, who are battling to contain rampant inflation and crippling consumer energy costs. Their pleas for the oil and gas industry to boost domestic production have gained little traction. Executives are cautious about how long high prices will persist and wary of committing to large fossil fuel projects that may become redundant as the world transitions to cleaner energy. The supermajors may not be able to keep capital expenditure this low for long due to their need to ramp up spending in an inflationary cost environment. Schlumberger NV, the world's biggest oil field service company, last week said sales increased nearly 20% from a year earlier and sees a multi-year upcycle in demand for its services. This situation risks a political backlash. The UK imposed a windfall tax on oil and gas profits earlier this month. Italy has passed a levy on the energy industry, while in France, some lawmakers are backing the idea of a special tax of as much as 3 billion euros, $3.1 billion, a year. President Emmanuel Macron has so far resisted such calls, instead urging companies, including Total Energies, to extend rebates on fuel purchases. In the U.S., Biden has criticized Exxon for making more money than God and accused other oil firms of exploiting high gasoline prices, but so far there has been no serious political pressure for a windfall tax. Against this turbulent backdrop, the most profitable quarter in the supermajors' history may not be cause for overt celebration. Most of the companies in this quarter are going to report record earnings, no question, said Scotiabank's Ching. But with the potential for severe recession and memories of 2020, I expect management teams to be conservative. Natural Gas Takes Traders on a White-Knuckled Ride by Diana Lee, Bloomberg. U.S. natural gas prices are keeping traders on the edge of their seats this summer. Futures plunged almost 40% after an explosion knocked out a key export terminal in Texas last month, leaving supply stranded in U.S. shale basins. But prices have been roaring back just as quickly, heading for a record monthly gain in July as sweltering weather dent stockpiles of the power plant fuel. Output from shale basins, meanwhile, isn't rising fast enough to meet demand. The roller coaster twists and turns of the gas market show how sensitive traders are to supply disruptions and spikes in demand as the fuel becomes increasingly crucial to the economy in the U.S. and abroad. More homes and businesses than ever rely on the fuel for heating and cooling. Before the blast at the Freeport Liquefied Natural Gas Terminal, the U.S. was sending almost three-quarters of all its LNG to Europe, a region struggling to replace supplies cut off by Russia amid the war in Ukraine. That's sort of a perfect storm here in terms of bullish inputs into this market, really making every molecule dear at this point, said John Kilduff, founding partner at hedge fund Again Capital in New York. U.S. natural gas futures have soared about 70% in July after fully erasing losses from the Freeport LNG outage in June. Extreme heat is keeping air conditioners humming, boosting gas demand, while the expiration of the August futures and options contracts is also adding to the momentum as traders rush to cover bearish positions. The June 8th blast at Freeport LNG took out about one-fifth of U.S. export capacity, keeping some supplies trapped in shale basins. But the U.S. is still selling LNG abroad at a rapid clip as Russia strangles supplies to Europe amid the war in Ukraine, leaving global buyers to compete for scarce cargoes. U.S. exports had risen earlier this year after Venture Global's Calsu Pass Export Terminal in Louisiana started up. This summer is on pace to be the hottest in records going back to 1950 in the U.S., helping to keep gas prices elevated, according to Matt Rogers, president of Commodity Weather Group. His estimate is based on cooling degree days, a measure of how weather affects energy demand. Gas demand for power generation has averaged 43.4 billion cubic feet a day in July, about 10% above year-earlier levels. As gas demand for power generation soars, less of the fuel is pumped into storage. U.S. inventories are 12% below the five-year average for the time of year, stoking concern about supply constraints this winter. The so-called widowmaker spread between gas delivered in March and April, essentially a bet on how low inventories will be by the end of winter, widened to the highest since 2006 for this time of year, signaling a growing consensus that supplies will be tight. Gas production from shale basins, meanwhile, is growing at only a measured pace. Drillers are under pressure from investors to keep a lid on capital spending, and while output is expanding as oil and gas prices soar, producers aren't fully opening the taps yet. U.S. sits on top of LNG exports as companies add capacity in Texas, by Amanda Drone, Houston Chronicle. America exported more liquefied natural gas than any other nation during the first half of this year, as natural gas shortages and the war in Ukraine pushed European demand for LNG to new heights. LNG exports jumped 12% to 11.2 billion cubic feet per day during the first two quarters of 2022 compared to the last two quarters of 2021, the Energy Department said Monday. Most of the LNG exports that left the U.S., 71%, went to Europe. Europe has relied heavily on LNG imports since earlier this year when Russia began sending less natural gas through its pipelines to Western Europe, helping to push the European Union's gas inventories to record lows. LNG companies are clamoring to the occasion, racing to develop new facilities and expand existing ones along the Gulf Coast. LNG export capacity has grown by around 2 billion cubic feet per day since November after the launch of Venture Global's Calsu Pass in Louisiana and capacity expansions at Cheniere's two facilities, Sabine Pass and Corpus Christi LNG facilities in Louisiana and Texas. Gas prices in Europe, meanwhile, reached record highs averaging around $31 per million British thermal units during the first half of the year, luring more American LNG across the pond. European demand for American LNG is likely to rise even further as winter approaches and as Russian supplies continue to slide. Gazprom, Russia's state-owned natural gas company, said Monday it would be further reducing flows of natural gas to Western Europe as it takes a second turbine offline for maintenance. The arbitrary logistical and documentation issues raised by Gazprom around the returning turbine further indicate the nature of the issue is not technical, but geopolitical, says James Huckstep, a natural gas analyst for S&P Global Commodity Insights, highlighting greater risk to remaining Russian flows going forward. Falling gas flows pose challenges for Europe as it works to store gas for the winter. The European Union has said it may be necessary to cut gas demand by 15% from August 1st through March of next year in order to balance short supplies with demand. The imbalance is likely to push up natural gas prices and put pressure on LNG companies along the Gulf Coast to increase their output. The uncertainty and confusion over Russian flows and their disruption is not going away soon and will therefore continue to support and push up gas prices, said Carolina Semyuk, an analyst with the energy consultancy Rystad. Germany's situation is so dire, it may need to take historic steps to curb demand through non-market measures, such as natural gas rationing, first with industry and then with neighborhoods. Clean Power Installations Plummet by Brian Eckhaus and Jennifer A. Dooley, Bloomberg. U.S. renewable power installations fell to an almost three-year low as trade disputes, uncertain federal policy, and supply chain snarls complicate President Joe Biden's bid to green the nation's power system. Clean energy installations in the second quarter plummeted 55% from the same period in 2021, according to a report Tuesday by the American Clean Power Association, a Washington-based industry group. It was the lowest quarter for clean energy capacity additions since the third period of 2019. Solar deployments were down 53% from the second quarter of last year, and onshore wind was 78% lower. Biden and his campaign pledged to pivot the country away from fossil fuels and accelerate clean power installations. Instead, the production of oil and gas on federal lands and waters has surged to an all-time high, while new wind and solar deployments have declined. Nearly 21 gigawatts of U.S. solar projects are delayed, the report found, chilled by an ongoing trade dispute. The Commerce Department is investigating allegations that Chinese companies are circumventing decade-old duties by assembling equipment in Cambodia, Malaysia, Thailand, and Vietnam.
Martha Naomi Almaris of Midland passed away on July 24th. Viewing is scheduled for Thursday the 28th from 4 to 9 p.m. at Luella Garcia Pipkin Funeral Home. A funeral service will be celebrated on Friday at 10 a.m. at First Assembly of God. Burial will follow at Serenity Memorial Gardens.
This is Connie reading the Odessa American for Wednesday, July 27, 2022. Commissioners signal willingness to sell Coliseum. Broker contract approved with Gardner. Stringer voting no. By Royal McGregor. There was standing room only during the Tuesday's Ector County Commissioners Court meeting. Residents flooded the meeting to relay their thoughts about the county entering a broker contract for the potential sale of the Ector County Coliseum. After more than 40 minutes, the Ector County Commissioners approved 3-2 to enter into a proposed real estate broker contract between Ector County and J.L. Heritage Cooper Key Realty for the potential sale of the Ector County Coliseum. The two dissenting votes were Commissioners of Precinct 1, Mike Gardner, and Precinct 3, Don Stringer. Gardner said during Tuesday's meeting that he believes this is a waste of time. That sentiment continued when Gardner spoke with the Odessa American after Tuesday's meeting. I don't know if I want to invest a whole bunch of time doing something that in my heart I feel like when we come down to the end of it that it's probably not going to sell anyway, Gardner said. Greg Simmons, the commissioner for Precinct 2, said after Tuesday's meeting that it doesn't hurt to hear the offers from the national company headquarters out of Florida that has properties across the country. Previous Odessa American stories have reported the offer for the Coliseum is between $20 to $25 million. Simmons agreed with the number that has been reported, and he explained to the Odessa American that he doesn't believe an official written offer has been extended. The Ector County Appraisal District lists the total market value for the Coliseum at a little over $28 million. "This doesn't commit us to anything," Simmons said. "This doesn't cost us anything. It opens a dialogue to a company that has expressed an interest. I don't know if they would come to a dollar amount that we would be happy with even selling. If we did like the dollars, I don't know if they would accept some of the restrictions and terms that we would want to put in place to protect some of the groups that have been lifelong users of the Coliseum." The Coliseum is home to the Chuck Wagon Gang, Jackalopes, Warbirds, Permian Basin Fair and Expo, and Sandhill Stock Show and Rodeo. Reactions from the crowd were mixed, as some welcomed the idea, while others were opposed to even hearing offers. One Chuck Wagon Gang member, Joe Albright, said to the commissioners, "Once the genie is out of the bottle, you can't get it back in." Many called the Coliseum priceless, as it serves many organizations throughout the country. Curtis said it would be folly not to explore the idea of a sale. He asked the commissioners to do what's best for the county, and he said if they are going to explore this option, to be transparent with the public throughout the process. Earls called the Coliseum a gem in the community. She said after doing a quick breakdown that events from the Coliseum have at least a $16 million economic impact annually to the community. "My concern is that if a private group owns the Coliseum, I see the price of rental rates going up," Earl said. "I see the price of everything going up. That is my concern. We want those events there, and we want people coming into the community." With many events already taking place throughout the year, commissioners ask about what could be done to keep those events there without raising the rates. Ector County Attorney Lee McLendon said the commissioners could put restrictions in the contract that would limit how much contracts could increase, and those restrictions would be honored if it was flipped in 5 years. The commissioners' court voted on June 28th to extend one-year contracts to Odessa Concessions Incorporated and Jackalopes Holding LLC. Simmons said the next step is to receive the interested company's official offer. He said the county doesn't have to accept any offer, and he said now that J.L. Heritage Cooper Key Realty is their broker, that other companies could submit offers. Gardner hopes a byproduct of opening discussion about the Coliseum is that people see a need for renovations to the facility. The commissioners also approved the Ector County Library to modify hours, new strategic plan, and the implementation of TikTok for library social media. Ector County Library Director Howard Marks told commissioners library hours would change to 9 a.m. to 7 p.m. Monday through Saturday. Students engage with STEM projects at Lego Camp by Michael Bauer, Midland. Carter West, 9, is one of many children who enjoys building objects with Legos. He hopes to use that passion to someday become a master builder. West is one of the numerous students who have been in attendance at the Lego Mini Masters, Shaken City Summer Camp, which is currently going on this week at the Petroleum Museum in Midland. "I like this camp because I love Legos," West said. "I just love creating things with my mind." The camp, which is for children ages 8 through 12, began on Monday and will wrap up on Thursday. It is one of many educational camps that the museum offers during the summer months. During the camp, children learn to construct buildings and other structures, such as bridges, that can withstand natural disasters like earthquakes and tornadoes. "We have different engineering projects set up throughout the camp centered around natural disasters or weather that we're talking about, like tornadoes," Director of Education and Marketing at the Petroleum Museum, Mara Bland, said. On Monday, the children worked on earthquakes, so they built Lego structures that could try and withstand an earthquake simulator. On Wednesday, Bland says the children will be engineering bridges out of Legos before breaking them. Similar activities will take place on the last day of camp on Thursday. On Tuesday, the children worked on structures that could withstand a tornado. Each day, the camp lasts from 8 a.m. to noon. Bland says that each day is split up into two sets of stations where, depending on what topic they're doing, the children will try to have an engineering project and build something that they can take home with them. "They love the Legos," Bland said. "That's probably the biggest hit. The bridges will probably be the biggest thing that they'll build because they have to be 2 feet long and they have to raise and build an actual bridge structure. So they have to choose one of the existing structures and replicate that." During the museum's summer science camps, students engaged in various experiments, creative activities, and robotic design. While summer might be coming to a close, Bland says the museum will offer other camps during the fall, including building bots classes. Odessa fees, taxes proposed to go up in 2023 by Kim Smith. The Odessa City Council met with staff to discuss FY23's proposed budget for the first time Tuesday. Included in the proposed budget is a 6% increase in water sewer rates, a 3.5% increase in solid waste rates, and a possible 2 cent property tax rate increase for every $100 of assessed valuation. City staff has recommended the council adopt a $109 million general fund budget compared to the $101 million last year, with the additional funding in large part going toward park improvements, fire rescue radios, IT switch upgrades, repairs, and improvements to several city buildings. The general fund budget also includes a 4% pay hike approved by the council in May. Included in the proposed budget are two neighborhood parks on the east side and $10 million in street projects, with part of the funding coming from leftover FY21-22 funds. City Manager Michael Marrero and Assistant Manager Administrative Services Cindy Muncy explained the rate increases are due at least partly to inflation. They said the city experienced a 6% tipping cost increase at the landfill this year. There's been a 50% increase in chemicals used by the city parks and water departments, and a 30-40% increase in equipment cost compared to the more typical 5% increase. A Fodray Road improvement project was budgeted for $20 million, but a recent bid came in at $31.5 million due to inflated asphalt and cement costs, they said. The council members spent much of the work session weighing the property tax increase, which would add about $1.3 million to the city's coffers. The city did not raise the tax rate the last two fiscal years, but rising appraisals meant most still paid more in property tax. If approved during the final budget meeting, the tax rate could increase to 2 cents. Muncy said the 2-cent increase may change depending upon what other taxing entities decide. Last year, a homeowner with a home valued at $174,000 paid $827.45 in city taxes. Muncy said following the meeting, if the 2-cent increase is adopted, that same homeowner would pay $862.07 in city taxes. Mayor Javier Hoven and council members Denise Swanner and Mark Mata voiced opposition to the increase, noting taxpayers will already see water and solid waste rates increases. Council members Steve Thompson, Detra White, Tom Sprawls, and Mary Willis reluctantly expressed support for the increase, in large part because the city is hiring an outside firm to compare the city's employee compensation packages with other communities and are convinced the city will end up having to increase wages as a result. Thompson reminded his fellow council members of his idea of issuing revenue bonds through the Odessa Development Corporation. Earlier this month, the councilman said the Economic Development Group was worth roughly $23 million to $25 million in uncommitted funds, and a portion of it could be used to address Odessa's aging water system and or to improve Odessa's roads without impacting taxpayers. The ODC uses sales tax revenues to provide companies with incentives to move to Odessa, but the grants they provide are paid on a staggered basis, so there is always funding available. We're always behind the curve on infrastructure, and we've got to get ahead of it, Thompson said. Willis noted that although taxpayers won't be happy, the increases impact council members and city staff as well. At the start of Tuesday's meeting, Marrero told council the city has seen a 4% increase in preliminary property values and a 16.79% increase in sales tax revenue collections. City staff has tentatively budgeted $45 million in sales tax receipts for FY25, roughly $6.5 million over last year. Also included in this year's proposed budget is a 2% increase in the city's contribution to Odessa Fire Rescue's pension contribution plan, which would take it up to 28%. The first public hearing on the budget is slated for August 23rd. Quick hits, donations, and back-to-school drive. First Basin Credit Union has scheduled the 7th annual back-to-school donation drive benefiting children of the Rainbow Room of the Permian Basin. First Basin is requesting monetary donations be made at the First Basin Credit Union locations in Odessa, Midland, or Andrews. Donations will be accepted through today. To date, First Basin Credit Union and other members have raised a total of $2,031, but we can do better. All donations collected will be presented to the Rainbow Room at 11 a.m. Friday at their office located at 2525 North Grandview Avenue. Origami and Coloring. The Ector County Library, 321 West 5th Street, has scheduled origami and coloring pages all day today in the Young Adult Department. For more information, call 432-332-0633. Pageant entries due soon. The Permian Basin Fair and Expo are currently taking registrations for the Miss Permian Basin Fair Scholarship Pageant through 5 p.m. August 10th. Contestants may also register for the Junior Miss Permian Basin Fair and the Little Miss Permian Basin Fair pageants. The pageants are scheduled at 7 p.m. September 3rd at the Ector County Coliseum Fairgrounds main stage. Additional charges filed against alleged sexual predator by Kim Smith. An Odessa man arrested last week after two women accused him of kidnapping them is now facing charges regarding a third woman. Javier Martinez Arias, 37, was arrested July 20th near Pagewood Avenue and University Boulevard shortly after a woman reported being kidnapped and almost sexually assaulted by him at a location off South Grandview Avenue. Deputies pulled Arias over after spotting him in a car matching the suspect's vehicle, and he was positively identified as the suspect. During the course of their investigations, deputies learned of two other potential victims. Arias was booked into the Ector County Jail on charges pertaining to two of the women, but continued their investigation into the third alleged incident. On Monday, Arias was booked into the jail on charges pertaining to that woman. According to the ECSO report, deputies were dispatched to Medical Center Hospital on July 11th about a woman who said she'd been sexually assaulted. The 18-year-old woman told deputies a man had taken her from a hotel on Business Loop 20 to a service road off I-20 and Grandview, and once they parked near a pump jack, the man said money in Spanish and pointed at his penis. According to the report, she tried to get out of the vehicle, but the man pulled her back in. When she scratched his face, he punched her in the face multiple times, raped her, and threw her out of the vehicle when he was done, the report stated. After Arias' arrest last week, investigators spoke with Arias and he admitted to raping the woman on July 11th, according to the report. The woman from July 11th was also able to pick Arias out of a phone lineup, the report stated. Arias is now being held at the jail on suspicion of three aggravated kidnapping charges and one count of aggravated sexual assault. In two of the aggravated kidnapping charges, it's also alleged he caused bodily injury and/or sexually assaulted the alleged victims. He's being held on surety bonds totaling $4 million. City to Hire Pay Study Consultant by Kim Smith. The Odessa City Council voted unanimously Tuesday night to hire an outside firm to study the compensation packages of all city employees with a priority to be given to Odessa Fire Rescue, Odessa Police Department, and Emergency Communications. Last week, the City Council indicated they wanted to rush the OPD and OFR study after members of the OFR spent 2 hours pleading their case. Last year, OFR lost 35 employees, most of whom headed to other departments for higher pay, OFR representatives said. Another 22 have left so far this year. Tuesday night, Sonia Cortez, an OPD custodian of records and a dispatcher, asked the council to consider adding dispatchers to the expedited study list. Cortez said people can go to work at Chick-fil-A and make $16 an hour, more money than those in emergency communications. The emergency communications department must have a minimum of 16 employees to operate, and it currently has one more than that, she said. Since March 2020, 49 people have applied for the position of dispatcher, 14 have passed the rigorous hiring process, and 12 made it through training, Cortez said. Of those 12, 5 are still with the department. They are having to rely on off-duty firefighters who work part-time to help out, Cortez said. She started a change.org petition to get support for pay raises for her department, and 928 have signed it, Cortez said. The council agreed to include the emergency communications department in the expedited portion of the study.
We've been reading from the Midland Reporter-Telegram and the Odessa American. Please stay tuned for the weather, followed by the second hour's reading of the newspapers.